All right, welcome everyone. Today we're going to be doing a deep dive into the world of drones.
That's right. The increasingly complex world of drones.
Yeah, you know, it seems like you've done quite a bit of research on this.
Yeah, well, it's a topic that's hard to ignore these days, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you've sent over a pretty impressive collection of sources here. We've got a detailed briefing document, some excerpts from the Navy Times, a Department of Defense press release, and even a news piece about a defense contractor.
Oh, yeah.
So clearly, you know, this is something you're pretty interested in, and I have to say you've piqued my curiosity as well.
Well, it's definitely a hot topic right now, especially with the evolving nature of warfare.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're going to try to unpack today.
Absolutely.
We're going to be exploring the nature of the drone threat, how the U.S. military is strategizing to counter it, and even touch upon some of the cutting-edge technology being deployed right now.
Yeah, that's really the... I guess the exciting part of this whole thing, right? All the new technologies coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. So by the end of this deep dive, you'll have a much clearer picture of this rapidly evolving landscape.
Definitely. And how all these pieces kind of fit together.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so one thing that struck me right off the bat, especially in that Department of Defense statement, is the urgency with which they're addressing this drone issue. They're making it very clear that this isn't some futuristic threat. Drones are already changing the face of warfare today.
It's a game changer for sure. I mean, you look at some of the recent conflicts around the world, and it's very clear that drones are playing a decisive role.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is how the sources highlight both the high-tech side of things, like, you know, nations developing these sophisticated military drones, but also how readily available smaller commercial drones are, and how they can be easily modified for nefarious purposes.
And that's really the challenge for defense forces right now.
Yeah.
Because you've got this whole spectrum of threats from a lone wolf with a, you know, a modified commercial drone to a, you know, a coordinated swarm of military grade unmanned systems.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that drones are being used within the U.S. homeland makes it all the more concerning.
Yeah, it's not just a problem for overseas conflicts anymore. It's something that we have to be aware of right here at home.
So it really does raise the stakes in terms of how we approach this.
Definitely. Yeah, it brings it much closer to home.
Okay, so it seems like the Pentagon is taking this pretty seriously. They've released this document called The Strategy for Countering Unmanned Systems. What are some of the key takeaways from that document? What are they actually doing about this?
Well, the first thing that jumps out is the emphasis on a unified approach.
Right.
Across all branches of the military.
So it's not just like the Army's doing their thing and the Navy's doing their own thing. It's really a...
Yeah, exactly. It's a recognition that this is a problem that requires a joint effort, a collaborative effort across all branches of the military.
So it's a much more holistic approach then.
Yes, definitely. And it's not just about reacting to current threats either.
Right.
It's about anticipating future developments in drone technology and adapting strategies accordingly.
Yeah, because the technology is moving so fast, you can't just rely on what works today, right?
Exactly, yeah, it's a constantly evolving landscape. You gotta be thinking ahead.
It's like a high stakes chess game, always trying to predict your opponent's next move.
Yeah, a great analogy there.
So it's not just about having the technology, it's about having the strategy, the foresight, to really understand how this is gonna play out.
And they've even set up some specialized offices and initiatives.
Oh, really?
To tackle this problem head on.
Like what?
Well, you've got the Joint Counter Small UAS office.
Oh, wow.
Which is specifically focused on tackling those smaller, more readily available drones.
Okay.
And then there's the Replicator Initiative, which is even more ambitious, aiming to develop and deploy thousands of autonomous counter drone systems.
Thousands. That's a lot.
It is a lot. It's a really ambitious undertaking.
Yeah.
But it shows you how seriously they're taking this threat.
Yeah, it really does sound like they're pulling out all the stops.
They are. They're recognizing that this is a game changer, and they're putting a lot of resources and effort into trying to stay ahead of the curve.
Okay, so we've established that the military is taking a multifaceted approach to this.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just relying on one silver bullet solution, but let's talk about some of the specific technology being developed and deployed. One system that really stood out to me was MADIS.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Marine Air Defense Integrated System.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. And it's described as a workhorse in one of the articles.
Yeah.
And the language they use creating an anti-access area denial bubble sounds pretty intense.
Yeah, MADIS is definitely one of the key players in the counter-drone game right now.
Okay, so what makes Meta so special?
Well, one of the things that makes it so effective is its mobility.
Okay.
It's designed to be mounted on a JLTV.
Now, I don't know what a JLTV is.
Oh, it's essentially a heavily armored, highly mobile, tactical vehicle used by the Marines. It's like a super jeep, so it can go anywhere.
So instead of being stuck in one place, it can actually move around the battlefield as needed.
Yeah, it can keep up with the fluid nature of modern warfare, which is really important when you're dealing with drones.
Yeah, and it's not just about mobility, right? It packs a punch when it comes to countermeasures.
Oh, absolutely. It utilizes both kinetic options like missiles and non-kinetic options like electronic jammers.
Oh, wow. So it's a bit of a Swiss Army knife of counter-drone measure.
Yeah, exactly. It's got the flexibility to address a variety of threats.
And it's not a one-size-fits-all solution.
No, not at all.
It's really tailored to the specific situation.
Yeah, and they're even developing a smaller, dismounted version of MADIS.
Oh, wow.
Which means that a squad of Marines on foot could potentially carry this powerful drone-killing technology with them.
That's incredible. It really paints a picture of how the nature of combat is changing.
It does. And it also raises some important questions about the training and tactics needed to effectively utilize these systems in such a dynamic environment.
Right. So it's not just about having the technology. It's about knowing how to use it.
Exactly.
Effectively and responsibly.
Absolutely.
Speaking of cutting edge tech, one of the articles you sent over focuses on a company called Endural.
Yeah, I've heard of them.
And their Roadrunner interceptor system.
Okay.
Endural just secured a $250 million contract for Roadrunner, which tells you how seriously the Pentagon is taking this technology.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
It is so passive. What makes Roadrunner so special? What sets it apart from other counter-drone systems?
Well, one of the key innovations with Roadrunner is its reusability.
Oh, so unlike traditional interceptors, which are kind of one-time use.
Exactly. They're basically expendable.
Okay.
But Roadrunner can be recovered and used multiple times.
So it's like those reusable rockets that SpaceX is using, but for taking down drones.
That's a good analogy.
That seems like it would have a huge impact on cost effectiveness, especially when you consider how many drones could be deployed in a large-scale conflict.
Exactly. I mean, the cost of countering a large-scale drone attack could be astronomical if you're relying on single-use interceptors. But Roadrunner offers a much more sustainable and affordable approach.
And it's not just about physical interception, right? It also has electronic warfare capabilities.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Roadrunner isn't just about knocking drones out of the sky. It can jam enemy systems, disrupt communications, and potentially even take control of hostile drones.
Wow. That's some next-level stuff.
Yes, yeah. It's a real game-changer in the counter-drone arena.
So with all these advancements in technology, how are the Marines themselves adapting to this new era of warfare?
That's a great question, and it leads us nicely into the next section where we'll discuss the Marine Corps' new littoral regiments.
Okay.
And how they're specifically designed to address the challenges of operating in a drone-heavy environment.
I'm intrigued. Tell me more about these littoral regiments.
One of the key things to understand about them is that they're smaller and more mobile than traditional Marine units. They're specifically designed for combat in the Indo-Pacific region, where island hopping and littoral warfare are expected to be key features of future conflicts.
And I imagine drones would play a significant role in those types of operations.
Oh, absolutely. The vast distances and dispersed nature of the Indo-Pacific make drones ideal for reconnaissance, surveillance, and even attack missions.
So the littoral regiments are really being designed to counter those threats.
Exactly. They're being equipped and trained to operate in a highly fluid and technologically advanced battle space.
So they're like the tip of the spear when it comes to facing this drone threat in that strategically vital region.
Yeah, you could say that.
It sounds like they'll be relying heavily on systems like MADIS and potentially even Roadrunner to carry out their missions effectively.
They will. And it's not just about the technology itself. It's about integrating those systems into a cohesive and adaptable fighting force.
This is all incredibly fascinating. I'm already starting to get a sense of just how complex this drone issue is. It's not just about technology or tactics. It's about adapting to a whole new way of waging war.
That's right. And we haven't even touched upon the Replicator Initiative yet.
Oh, that's right.
Which you mentioned earlier. That's the one about developing thousands of autonomous systems.
Yeah. It seems almost like a science fiction concept.
It does. But it's becoming a reality.
So we're talking about a potential paradigm shift in warfare here.
Yeah, we are. And that's something that we can explore in part two of our deep dive.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready for part two.
All right. Let's take a break and then we'll come back and dive into the world of autonomous systems.
Sounds good.
All right. You know, when we talk about the Replicator Initiative, it really kind of blurs those lines between science fiction and reality.
Yeah.
We've all seen those movies with swarms of, you know, intelligent machines waging war.
Right.
And it seems like we're getting closer and closer to that becoming a real possibility.
Yeah. It's definitely a mind-bending concept to try to wrap your head around.
It is.
I mean, just the sheer scale of it, thousands of autonomous systems
right.
operating in a coordinated fashion. It's hard to even imagine what that would look like on a battlefield.
Well, and one of the key things to remember is that these aren't just, you know, mindless robots
right.
following pre-programmed instructions. These are systems that are designed to be adaptive, to learn from their environment,
mm-hmm.
and to make decisions based on real-time data.
So they're not just reacting to what's happening. They're actually analyzing the situation and
yeah.
making strategic choices on their own.
Exactly. And that's a huge leap forward in military technology.
It is. And I imagine it raises some pretty big questions.
Oh, absolutely.
About, you know, the future of warfare, the role of humans in combat.
Yeah. It's a huge ethical debate as well.
Yeah. I can imagine. Are there any kind of frameworks or guidelines being developed to address this?
One concept that's gaining a lot of traction is the idea of human-machine teaming.
Okay.
So the idea isn't necessarily to replace human soldiers with robots, but to find ways for humans and machines to work together.
So it's not an either-or scenario. It's more about finding that right balance.
Yeah. Leverage the strengths of both.
Oh.
Humans excel at things like judgment, intuition, ethical reasoning,
mm-hmm.
while machines are better at processing vast amounts of data, reacting quickly, operating in hazardous environments.
So it's almost like a partnership where each side brings its own unique capabilities to the table.
That's a great way to think about it.
And this concept of human-machine teaming, it's not just limited to the battlefield, is it?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it has potential applications in all sorts of fields.
Like what?
Disaster relief, space exploration, you name it.
So it really is a fundamental shift in how we think about technology and its role in our lives.
It is, and it's happening right now. I mean, these advancements are not just theoretical.
Right.
They're having a real impact on how we think about warfare, national security, even our everyday lives.
So it's not just a matter of if these technologies will change the world, but how they will change the world.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to have these conversations now, to think critically about the implications and to develop frameworks for their responsible use.
Okay. So we've got these incredible technological advancements happening, but we're also grappling with some pretty profound
right.
ethical and strategic questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot to process.
It is.
But, you know, with all this talk about the future of warfare
and
autonomous systems, it's easy to kind of lose sight of the immediate challenges.
Right.
The fact remains that drones are already being used in conflicts around the world, and they're posing a very real threat to both military personnel and civilians. So with all this technology being developed, are we actually making any headway in countering the drone threat?
It's a good question and a tough one to answer.
Yeah.
I mean, on the one hand, these new technologies are definitely giving us more options,
okay.
more capabilities when it comes to countering drones.
So there's reason to be optimistic.
Well, to a certain extent, yes. But it's important to remember that this is an ongoing arms race.
Right.
As we develop new countermeasures, our adversaries are constantly adapting, developing new tactics and technologies to overcome them.
So it's like a game of chess.
It is.
Where each move leads to a counter move.
Exactly. And it's a game that's being played out on a global scale.
It sounds like we're in for a long and complex struggle when it comes to dealing with this drone threat.
Probably a fair assessment.
Yeah.
But it's a struggle that we can't afford to ignore.
Right. The stakes are too high.
They are.
Okay. So we've talked about the technology, the tactics, the ethical considerations, but there's another aspect of this whole drone issue that we haven't really touched on yet, the legal and international implications.
Right.
With drones operating across borders in international airspace,
yeah.
potentially even in the hands of non-state actors,
it
seems like there would be a lot of legal gray areas.
There are a lot of legal gray areas.
Yeah.
I mean, the existing legal frameworks were really developed in a time when drones didn't even exist.
Right.
So we're having to rethink a lot of those assumptions and frameworks.
So we're not just talking about developing new technologies. We're talking about developing new laws and international agreements.
Exactly. And that's where your expertise comes in.
Okay. Now you've really piqued my interest.
Yeah.
Tell me more about how my expertise in international law could be relevant to this whole drone issue.
Well, for starters, understanding existing treaties and conventions related to airspace,
mm-hmm.
warfare, the use of force.
Okay.
Then there's the question of how those existing legal frameworks can be applied or adapted to address the unique challenges posed by drones.
Right.
And of course, there's the need to develop new laws and agreements specifically tailored to drone warfare.
It sounds like a fascinating and challenging area of law to be involved in.
It is, and it's an area that's only going to become more important in the years to come.
Okay, so we're going to dive a bit deeper into this intersection of law and technology in part three.
We are.
Okay, so we're back and ready to really unpack this whole legal side of the drone issue.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah, it seems like it. And, you know, you mentioned that a lot of the existing legal frameworks are struggling to keep up with all this new technology.
Yeah, they were designed for a different world, really.
Yeah. So can you give me some concrete examples of where those frameworks are falling short?
Well, one of the most obvious ones is airspace sovereignty.
Right.
I mean, traditionally, nations have had, you know, exclusive control over their own airspace.
Right.
But drones can easily cross borders.
Right.
So it really kind of blurs the lines.
So if a drone from country A flies into the airspace of country B,
mm-hmm.
does country B have the right to just shoot it down, even if it's not like an act of war?
Yeah, that's a question that's being debated right now.
Yeah.
Some argue that existing laws of self-defense
okay.
give nations the right to protect themselves from any perceived threat, including drones.
Including drones.
Others argue that shooting down a drone, even if it's in your airspace,
mm-hmm.
could be seen as an act of aggression.
Right.
Potentially escalating tensions.
Yeah, so it's a really delicate situation.
It is a very delicate situation, yeah.
And it's not just about airspace sovereignty, right?
Right.
There's also all these questions about the use of drones in warfare.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the targeted killings
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the potential for collateral damage.
Yeah, the existing laws of war, which were, you know, developed in a very different context.
Right.
Are struggling to keep pace with the unique capabilities of drones.
So, for instance.
Well, the principle of proportionality, for example.
Okay.
Which states that military actions shouldn't cause excessive civilian casualties.
Right.
That's really hard to apply to drone strikes.
Right.
Where the operator might be thousands of miles away.
Right. And have a very limited understanding of what's happening on the ground.
Limited situational awareness.
Yeah. It seems like that distance and detachment could really make it difficult to assess, you know, the potential for civilian casualties.
It does. And it's not just about the laws themselves.
Okay.
It's also about how they're interpreted and enforced
yeah.
in this new world of drone warfare.
Right. And there's also the issue of accountability and transparency.
Exactly.
Right.
There are growing calls for stricter regulations on the development, the sale,
mm-hmm.
the use of drones,
mm-hmm.
as well as more robust mechanisms for investigating incidents involving drones.
So it's not just about having the laws on the books.
Right.
It's about making sure that those laws are actually...
Yeah, enforced and followed.
Enforced and followed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's where international cooperation becomes so important.
Yeah, because this isn't something that any one nation
yeah.
can really solve on its own right.
It's a global issue. It requires a global response.
So are there any international efforts underway to kind of address this?
There are a number of initiatives and discussions happening at the international level
mm-hmm.
to try to develop some kind of, you know, global norms and standards
sure.
for the responsible use of drones.
And is that something that, you know, with my expertise in international law,
absolutely,
I could potentially contribute to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, understanding existing treaties and conventions,
mm-hmm.
working to adapt those frameworks to the unique challenges posed by drones.
Okay.
Potentially even helping to craft new international agreements specifically tailored to drone warfare.
Wow. I mean, it really does seem like a fascinating
yes.
and challenging area of law
yes.
to be involved in.
And it's an area that's only going to become more important in the years to come as drones become even more prevalent
yeah.
in both military and civilian contexts.
Well, this has been an absolutely incredible deep dive.
It has.
I feel like I've learned so much, and I'm definitely walking away with a lot to think about.
That's what we like to hear.
So thank you so much for guiding me through this complex and fascinating world.
It's been my pleasure.
And to all of you listening out there, thank you for joining us on this journey.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We hope you found it as enlightening as we did. And remember,
yeah,
the world of drones is constantly evolving. So keep exploring, keep asking questions.
Absolutely.
And keep pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Couldn't have said it better myself.